Are you alive? Then you know that we are living in perilous times. Dangerous earth change events, signs in the heavens, wars and rumors of wars, earthquakes are on the increase. Join Kirtner and Kerr on 2nd and 4th Monday nights of the month at 5 p.m., where we interview the watchmen of the body of Christ. Learn the truth about the soon coming King. That's Kirtner and Kerr on 2nd and 4th Mondays right here on WBCR 1470 AM.
Welcome to the Kirtner and Kerr radio show. And I just jumped right in there and said, Kerr, are you there too?
Yes, sir. We're going 50 miles an hour now.
Okay, that's even better. So you're about 15 minutes out. Well, that's good. Listeners, today we have an incredible program. We have Stan Deo with us of standeo.com, and a lot of you that are out there listening have probably heard of this person. Stan, are you with us?
I am indeed. Thank you.
All right. It is so good to have you with us.
You know, it's extraordinary with the electronics and stuff. CK, 15 minutes out on the approach path. Got you there in the studio, me here in Colorado. Wow. And it all comes together live. One.
Yeah, it is amazing. Well, speed, what? The speed of light about seven point something times around the Earth in a second?
Well, so they say. I suppose they'll do.
But then, of course, we've got all the links, uplinks, downlinks, side links, who knows. So there's a lot of steps in there, but
it's is like right next door. That's just really good.
It is amazing, yes. So I bet you have some surprises or at least some good information for us. The scope of this this program is normally prophetic-oriented, end-times-oriented, but there's so many things that tie into that, and there's so many topics and so many subjects that we could touch on. So I think that you've told me that you are prepared to roll, and so we're going to turn this program over to you, really.
Oh, all right. I suppose, you know, if you go to our website, Holly gets that updated with current news that relates to biblical prophecy and current events and all together. And she does that 6 days a week. Takes her about 5 to 7 hours every day to do that. She gets up about 4:30 in the morning to start that. And my eyelids are still glued shut by, it's still 7 o'clock, you know. I work the other side of the clock, you know. I'm a late owl, night owl. But anyway, on our website, she has like three columns of different kinds of news, you know, political, weather, economic, financial, you know. And you can scroll down. She puts little pictures in there to tell you basically what the article's about, most of it, right? And there's one today she just put up today. It's called Undeniable American Civil War. It is in the cards. And it's an article from Veterans Today, Military and Foreign Affairs Journal, which is, you know, a reputable journal. People ought to go there and read that because it's telling about how we've all been kind of whispering for months now then in the back room, you know, that we're in prophecy, that we could be seeing an American Civil War, you know, between races. You know, ethnic wars, financial distribution wars, like the rich against the poor, and even religious type things, you know, Muslim against Christian, Jewish, and vice versa, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this event, I think, is upon us before the end of the year. Now, I know that this is not, what I'm going to tell you here, is not biblically based. And a bunch of the people of the tribes are all gathered together in the town. And because of some things that I had explained to them, which we were invited down, and I did explain these things to the computer there about current events, biblical prophecy, they told me that we're about to see a terrible, multifaceted civil war in the United States. And not between the Indians, but against you know, the group I just told you about against each other, extreme right, extreme left, the poor, rich, you know, ethnicities, economic strata, etc. We are about to see it, they said, and when this happens, you will bring your country, you know, the United States down. It's our country to them because they treat us as the Bahana, the non-Hopi.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, your country will tear itself apart. And while it's doing that, foreign powers will seize that opportunity to strike and invade you. And there will be many people killed in the fighting from within the country and from without the country coming in. That there will be survivors from this, and groups of then will approach us here in Arizona, northern Arizona, to the Hopi and to the Navajo. And there will be kind of a rough union of the survivors and with the Indians. And after a few months, they will travel together in somewhat of a peaceful coexistence up into the Four Corners of Colorado, where they will form a new nation, which will not be the old United States, but a new nation. How long this will take, I don't know, but they say before they leave the northern Arizona mesa, where they all dwell, that there will be water so high in the desert there, at the mile high, it'll come up to the height that it means they will have to go between the three mesas of the Hopis by canoe. And then, after all this passes and the survivors of the Civil War of the United States reach them, then they will form this joint new tribe and come up into the Four Corners. Now, before all that happens, while they're there in northern Arizona, they are expecting the sun to get very hot, which ties in with the Book of the Revelation of John. And they have been preparing, some of them that believe this warning from their elders, have been preparing underground, like mud, Eskimo, igloo-type things, which they call kivas. And they've been doing this to hide them from the heat of the sun for several days to several weeks. To that end, they've been storing what water they could and using wood ash to preserve corn and beans and pots, which will keep it for 30 years, they tell me, to get ready to endure this period of time when the sun gets so hot that it will burn the trees and the grass and that no one can live up above ground. They have to find cool places to hide in caves underneath ground. And I'm hoping that means that if we're here, that basement will survive. I don't know. But because it does come to the post of prophecy, I am interested, not only because it fits prophecy in the Bible, but because of what current events are showing us in the sun's behavior. The sun is not acting right, and there's several schools of thought about why it's not, but the accepted Orthodox scientific community is saying that the sun is entering into the peak of a grand solar maximum. And what that means in English is that the sunspot activity is at its peak, and we're approaching that, and that we've been registering that for 24 cycles of 11.5 to 7.8 years. Every one of these cycles, the records have been kept to see how many sunspots. Now, notice I said how many sunspots are on the sun. Not so much the surface area covered by those sunspots, but just how many spots. Well, it turns out that we can have less spots like we do in this cycle, but we can have more coronal mass ejections, more solar flares, and more emissions in various ultraviolet frequencies that are harmful to life here on the planet. So we're all watching it very closely over the next 12 to 24 months to see, you know, if it does indeed erupt, if the surface of the sun does go through a state change. We know that since 1992 that there have been two totally new ultraviolet frequency bandwidths come out of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, you know, the nuclear physicists can say and the solar physicists can say, okay, these are the wavelengths that come out of the sun, you know, in normal operation. Well, these two bandwidths were totally new. Now,
what?
I talked to one of them, sorry.
What materials would be undergoing fusion for those two wavelengths? Do you know?
Look, I don't know any more than what they're releasing. And mm-hmm. I did talk to one of the physicists that was reporting this and wrote a paper on it. In fact, I've got a copy of the paper here in my record from the solar observatory there in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that this new bandwidth in ultraviolet range, I said to him, look, can this cause cancer and stuff like that? Is it that kind of ultraviolet? No. He said, but what it is causing is something that you wouldn't expect. He said that particular pair of ultraviolet bandwidths that are now coming from the sun are being absorbed by phytoplankton and microbial life forms in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of this ultraviolet reflecting back out into space, it is being trapped into our ecosphere, and it's causing global warming because these animals are warming up because they're thriving on it and they're living on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the oceans get warm, it's not from cow gas. This is from activity in the ocean. So that's what, you know, on the cards at the moment. Something is happening to cause a change in the stable, you know, traditionally stable nuclear fusion and fission reactions in the sun. We have already, probably 20 years ago, burned up half of the hydrogen fuel the sun has to start with. Mm-hmm. The Russian reports have, you know, confirmed that. So we're now beyond that point, a little bit, not much in stellar terms, but it is something that could cause a change from the primarily fission reaction to a fusion reaction. The diameter of the sun could temporarily expand and collapse back. It could expand and stay expanded. I don't think it'll go to a red giant stage, but the expansion of even, you know, 1%, 2% for a short period of time could increase the light output to us enough to make it very uncomfortable. Now, historically, Thomas, if the temperature, the average temperature of the entire planet dropped by 2 degrees centigrade, mm-hmm. we would have an ice age, mm-hmm. you know, freeze the mammoths and the, you know, and freeze the planet.
Right.
Well, we're not going that way right now. We're going the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not at 2 degrees above the norm. We're at 1.2 degrees centigrade. And that means that we are, at this point, 60% into like a firestorm for the planet. You know, it's going to be hot. And this is a great concern, especially right now, since our magnetic field on the Earth is weakening. It has been weakening for a long time, but it's now getting to a point where it's unstable. And the North Pole is wandering, you know, a lot, more than it ever has. Now, if our magnetic field is not strong enough, stable enough, to withstand the change in the magnetic field of the sun, which occurs every 7 years, 22 years, what they call Hale magnetic cycle before it reverts back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
If the sun flips, and this, which it will do, it flips this magnetic pole in this solar grand maximum, which has never occurred before. You know, we've never had a grand maximum record. If it flips, and that strength of that flip is transmitted into the solar wind, the proton storms, the positive charges that hit our planet and other planets, it could cause our own field to flip upside down to try to match it,
mm-hmm.
because our field is so weak.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, there's going to be chaos in electronics and navigation and, you know, all across the planet, even if we don't have a physical reversal of the North and South Pole, but a geomagnetic one, this would cause problems. But this is not the situation entirely. We're getting reports from people in the Eskimos in North Alaska. We're getting reports from people south of us here. And I'm confirming the reports as we get them, trying to locate where the sun is setting. Because in the far north, the sun is not setting where it should, but it rises in the right place, which tells us we have an asymmetric axis of spin forming in the Earth, a new axis of spin. It's a periodic wobble, and then it returns to normal. So we're tracking this the best we can with the reports we can get from these amateurs to try to get bearings and exact, you know, compass readings, that kind of stuff. It's like when I was a kid a long time ago, we used to have tops that we could wrap a string around and spin them real fast and throw them on the ground, and they would spin, and we would have a top, you know, competition to see who could knock the other guy's top out. Well, when your top got slower and slower, was about to fall over, it would periodically do a little wiggle dance and then straighten back up and return to normal, and then mm-hmm. wiggle dance.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just before, you know, it finally expired and fell down and stopped.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think we're seeing, is an asymmetric wobble like that that appears briefly and then returns back to normal.
Now, is this a function of oceans, or is it crustal, or how is it coming about?
It can be a function of oceans. It can be a function of core fluid movement, you know, plasma movements, or magma. I mean, there are a number of things happening. And periodically, every planet, every moon, every star, every galaxy goes through an expansion phase. It expands the diameter of these things. Now, the Earth is now a third bigger in diameter than it was when all the comets were together in one piece. This has more than once been proven by the scientific community now, that the Earth is expanding. So is Mars. You can see it in the... when you shrink down the planet, you can see how the continents of Mars fit together, the surface structures. The moon is the same way, and our sun is that way. Periodically, energy escapes as little tiny holes open up at the poles of the planet and of the stars and of the galaxy. and only the last, you know, they've done the last 5 years when we put the new satellites up to monitor extremely high frequencies that come out of the north and south pole of a galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Due to the black hole at the center, supermassive.
It's a supermassive black hole mm-hmm. at the center of the galaxy. Now, as far as they can determine at this point, without checking every galaxy, it appears that every galaxy does have a supermassive black hole at the center. But it goes through stages as well, where the poles are sealed and it's absorbing light and everything, and nothing gets out. And you think, wow, it's just an infinite sink of energy going down into nothingness there. Not so. They have found that after absorbing energy for a while, a supermassive black hole will open up its polar regions. Holes will open up, and super high frequency and high energy photons will blast out the north and south poles of these supermassive black holes, which is the north and south poles of a galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things, this kind of behavior seems to flow right on down to our stars, to our sun, and to our planet. So that means that people talking about a cavity-filled Earth or an Earth with a shell that's empty in it, or not totally empty like a hollow Earth, but with voids in it, is very possible. And it's very possible that periodically small openings occur at the poles, at least at the North Pole, possibly the South Pole, where energy escapes and things get warm. Now, what is happening right now on the Earth is really quite puzzling, because the North Pole is heating up, is releasing energy into the ice pack and melting it,
mm-hmm.
while at the South Pole, it is freezing. It's a massive record ice deposit on the mountains and the landmass of Antarctica.
Well, that's unbalanced.
It is. Now, the only thing that I can think is happening to cause it, while the poles are starting to expand, and the planet itself, is that the Earth's magnetic field is moving in such a manner that it's causing more of a trans-equatorial spin of the magma that produces, you know, the magnetic north and south pole, the electricity that it produces. And we know for a fact that when you have a direct current passing through a wire, and you put a candle under that wire somewhere,
mm-hmm.
that the direct current, the current part of the current, will move that heat downstream from where it actually enters the wire. So heat can transmit, electricity can transmit heat through the matrix of the atom in a conductor. Now the Earth is a conductor in certain cases, and that's why we have the magnetic field. So something could be happening where energy is coming out of the Antarctic region and transmitting up into the polar region, so that it's actually driving heat away from the Antarctic region up into the northern region,
mm-hmm.
as part of this photodynamic thing from heat and electricity mixing together in the same environment.
Hey, Stan, this is Chris, CK, made it in
yep.
here. I haven't heard you say a thing that electric cars and global taxation will fix.
Really?
Really. So what is our homeland security? I guess they're ahead of... why aren't they telling the people what's going on? Surely they know as much as we do or more.
Oh, I'm sure they know more. And look, in fairness, if I were in charge of the United States or the planet for that matter, and something this big is happening, I would try to figure out how to prepare emergency supplies for as many people in this industry that we want to keep and bring back as possible in the event something like this is about to happen. But I would not just come out, way ahead of the event and say, look, you're all doomed. You're going to die. It's a terrible thing, but, good luck. We'll see you around.
Anarchy. Yeah, total anarchy.
But there is a way. There is a way. If I were in charge, I would say, okay, look, let's leak information to unofficial sources, and if any of them starts to get too much support and popularity, we'll discredit them, but otherwise, let's let them roll, and if they'll leak this out into the blog talks, the normal radio, and DVDs. Let it leak out through Hollywood.
Movies,
and people,
yeah.
Okay, and people will kind of, that are thinking people and rational people say, I'll look into that. And the more information that they find to support the situation, they'll realize maybe it's not bad information. Maybe it will happen. And they start to prepare. And I suppose the rest of the people will find out later in the game, but they should have paid more attention to what was being laid in front of them. I think mm-hmm. would be my thing. It's just there's no other way to avoid the disaster, and you have to try to figure out how to. It's like a lifeboat. It's loaded to the hilt with people. You can't take any more on board. There's a certain point where there are going to have to be some fatalities. Huh. Now, the good Lord certainly is going to deal with all of us once we die. And so I tell people when they're preparing for this disaster or that disaster, you know, there's probably 60 or so more types of disasters you can list. And not to be totally dedicated to just preparing for all these disasters. Do what you can and understand your relationship with the good Lord is the most important preparation. Mm-hmm. So if you die, you know, ahead of what you thought you would, at least you've got the important one done, your relationship through Jesus Christ, and that's it.
Amen. Stan, I had a friend ask me to ask you, was it in Australia that you had a spiritual awakening? Was it in that time of your life?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look,
how did that happen?
Sorry?
How did that happen? What is your testimony, so to speak?
Well, you know, I was raised in a home that was you know, more Presbyterian than Jewish. My father was Jewish, my mother was Presbyterian Baptist, you know, combined too. And so I had a taste of both sides of that. And, you know, did my memory work and, you know, at the Presbyterian church, went through the catechism and all that stuff. But it was just a mechanical thing. It wasn't really understanding and really believing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Doing what I was supposed to do to keep everybody happy. So I, through a number of very strange events, was recruited to go to Australia to work for Dr. Edward Teller. And this had come about after I'd had, in 1969, I had an illness, like a fungal or bacterial infection, nearly killed me until they gave me some experimental acrimonizing forward at the hospital. And I nearly died that night. In fact, I left my body, went out to, you know, did a life review and that great piece out there. And even that.
A near-death experience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It didn't totally change my behavior or thoughts at that point. But after I came back into my body and realized what had happened, my body was healed. The pain was gone. And I don't even think I finished taking the full treatment of their acrimonizing before. But I remember when I got up and out and went to my apartment, it was still like pre-dawn. And I went to a all-night cafe, and the sun was coming up, and so I ordered, you know, pancakes or something or other. And I was the only one there that morning, so the waitress was standing there talking to me, and I had a napkin, and I was doodling on the napkin and talking to her and really feeling kind of very strange at the out-of-body thing, you know, just trying to process it all. And I drew a picture of the Earth and the continents and from one view and out in space somewhere, and then of a flying saucer outside that, and she said, "Oh, what's that?" And I said, "This is a book I'm going to write." Now, if you know how far from my behavior writing was, I was an engineer, a physicist, that kind of person, mathematician. Writing did not interest me at all, and so for me to say that even shocked me. And she said, "What are you going to call it?" And I said, "It's going to be called something about the creation conquest or something. I can't quite, you know, remember." And that was in 69. 2 years later, in September, after being rather strangely approached by Dr. Teller's people to go work on flying saucers and anti-gravity in Australia, I left the United States with my family, and we arrived down in Melbourne, and I began, you know, to make a new life there and to write a paper on, you know, plasma-driven saucer craft, which I was going to patent anyway, but they suggested I didn't. A year and a half into my association with the Teller's group down there, I wanted to share some of our technology, our free energy technology, the electrogravitics or anti-gravity, which other departments were doing, not me, but I wanted to share that with some of the less fortunate nations who had a lot of people that didn't have water. water even every day, and we could at least give them water and free energy so they could pump their water and purify it and could grow their own food, and they would survive.
Well, you can't kick the global elite in the shin like that and expect to be able to have success.
Well, I did. I thought I could. And anyway, it became apparent that they wanted me to disappear. They got all of my records and boxed them up, and Sagan, who was my my patrol officer there, he had his chauffeur drive this up to my doorstep and say, "You're now no longer part of us. You know, we disavow any knowledge of you," and that's it. And because, you know, he didn't live on a reservation or anything. He lived in normal houses and stuff there in Melbourne. But I thought, well, that's strange. And not long after the papers and stuff were delivered, my wife at the time got very frightened and took the boys and headed for America. And I couldn't afford to pay for anything except for them. And, so I stayed.
You got left behind.
I got left behind. I really did. And it was probably one of the most difficult moments I'd had then, and I suppose even now when I think how painful it was watching my boys go.
I can only imagine.
Anyway, they survived, and they now have families and their grandchildren of their own here in America. But after she was gone, I kind of drifted around there, you know, doing some odd jobs in town where I could find work. And it wasn't high-paying jobs, I must add. It was like, you know, cook in a Mexican food restaurant or,
You couldn't even be a barista in Starbucks. They didn't exist yet.
No, couldn't do. While I was doing this, I was approached I was asked to go to lunch with a particular attorney from the group, the Illuminous group that really controls the Teller Project. And they said, look, we know we've had bad words, but what we want to let you do is continue your work on the alternate energy. Some of the ideas you had we thought were pretty good, but you understand if we were to erect an antenna up, like you're talking about, people would see it. But what about let's drop one down a mine shaft, say, you know, 5,000 feet deep, and you could set up the lab at the bottom of that and run your research from there.
5,000 feet?
Yeah, well, they had to find out the Ballarat and the minefield further down. But I thought, wow, that'd be underground a long way. You can't tell anybody this, he says. You know, we want you to go down there and do the research, and we'll put food packs and stuff down, what you need. But that way you're out of the civilian observation. And basically what they were telling me was, we're going to put you in the bottom of a mine shaft, and you're going to disappear. Now, maybe they meant for me to hit the road and disappear, or maybe they thought I was dumb enough to accept that. But anyway, I thank you very much. Well, I'll get back to you next week. And during that week, I made plans very quietly with hippie friends that I'd made in the process of working those places. And they were thinking to head off to go west through Adelaide and then into the Great Nullarbor Desert and then across to West Australia. So I said to them, look, okay, we can only talk about this face-to-face out on the phone. I'm going with you, and I'll meet you. You go ahead and go, and I'll meet you a couple of days later over in Adelaide. They had a place where we could crash it. So I did that. I sneaked off midnight one night. Instead of going back to the house I was renting, I had made all the arrangements to have the keys and payments for the rent and everything transferred without me being there. So instead of coming home from work at the restaurant there, I packed up the car at midnight and put the pedal to the metal and drove all night and then the early morning over into Adelaide, where I crashed at the place I was supposed to.
So you kind of disappeared.
Oh, I did. I was gone off the radar for 6 months. I couldn't find it. Grew long hair, put a bandana on, and, looked the part of the hippie so that, I disappeared. And even in the streets, people don't look at all these hippie types because they're unclean and, dope smokers or something, and so he just disappeared. Something I was taught by Australian Secret Service fellow, Special Air Service, FAS. And he said, this is what you need to hide in plain sight. So I did. Now, I was there in Adelaide for about 6 months or so, and finally it's time for us to move on to West Australia. And I had, actually I wasn't there that long. I was probably there about 4 months, but it was about 6 months by the time I hit Perth. But anyway, we had made friends under a pseudonym up there in Adelaide, and some of the friends knew that we were fixing to leave town and wanted us to go to a UFO meeting where people talked about, you know, abductions or whatever their interest was, UFO, you know, a UFO club type.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't too interested in going, but anyway, since we were on the way out of town that very night, we had everything packed to throw up in the meeting. I was sitting in the meeting and, with my friends. The host was up there talking about this and that, and I was thinking, oh, yawn, they don't even know what the heck they're talking about, but that's all right. Until he said, and then we have a special guest, and he called me by my pseudonym, and apparently knows a lot about this stuff, so we come up and speak to it. So, you know, I was suddenly thrust on stage and spoke to him about a number of things, and some of the research I've done there in Adelaide, you know, under my assumed name, about the numbering in the computer system there at the FCA Finance Corporation of Australia and their buildings across Australia and their link up to IBM computers across the planet. And I explained to them how, you know, I'd even sat in meetings where, before I left the States, where we had planned a way to put an ID number on people so it couldn't be removed, and that, that way that organized crime couldn't use it to steal money. There would always be a credit pass for people. So I finished my talk and sat down, and you know, everybody, you know, flat and clap, and that, and it's over, and then the meeting is adjourned, and so I'm starting to go out the door with my friends, and this little old lady wearing all black, you know, she must have been Italian or something, but old white-haired lady, and she grabs my hand, she puts this Bible in my hand, and she says, you know, I've marked the page there for in a verse. You read it when you get to where you're going. And because I know you're leaving tonight. And I said, oh, okay. And she says, I think you'll find it very interesting. So she pressed my hand. I put it in my coat pocket, and off we went. Now, a few days later, by that time, we were in the middle of a lot of dust and sand in the Malabar Desert. And I was sitting under the headlights of the car because, you know, we could the campfire light was read by. And I was looking at what she had said, you know, to look at, and it was in the 13th chapter of Revelation about the mark of the beast, you know, the right hand, the forehead, and it was virtually everything I had said, you know, before we determined where it would be on the right hand, because that's where the keys are, you know, and you carry groceries goods in your left hand, and you didn't have arms or hands, then you could have it in your forehead and the bony part that could read it well, and, you know, it would work there in the bony part, especially with people that had beards or women who wore burqas, and we've gone through all this, you know. And so when I saw it kind of outlined here in the Revelation of John, and I thought about what was happening, here I was in the middle of the desert, 12,000 miles from where I grew up, and I had probably, you know, at that point we'd already determined I had CIA, FBI, and probably Russian KGB looking for me at the moment to pick my brain for what I knew. And life was kind of a mess there, so you know, I thought, well, Lord, if you're listening, yes. You know, I believe this now, and I understand. And seeing how we might meet a lot sooner than I thought, you know, maybe you could watch over things for me here and understand that I'm on your team. So I made my commitment there to the Lord in the headlights of that old Holden, which is kind of like a Chevy brand there in the middle of the desert. And things after that started to happen rather rapidly to convince me that the Lord was looking after me.
Well, it's incredible. You were doing just basic research, and the most logical way to do these bio-identifications just happened to fit the scriptures.
And well, I tried to get to get up in the top floor of the FCA building there in Adelaide because I knew that they were part of the credit card data backup system that was worldwide going back into Brussels. There were about, at that time, I think we had about 198 super IBM computers linked up across the planet. At the close of business in each location, as the sun went around, you know, as we revolved into a 24-hour day, there would be dumps into there from the trading, the credit card trading in all the countries. From that, they were analyzing buying patterns of people and other psychological data they could deduct from that. That was something that was already in the wind then. So I thought, well, I'll go up and see if I can talk to these guys. I'll use my fake name and see if I can apply for work and get into the FCA building because there's no windows in it except on the sixth floor, and those are heavily shielded with metal, shades that can be pulled in and peeled down. So I went in there, and I managed to sneak in during the lunch break. I waited until, you know, the secretaries and people went out to lunch. think. I saw here to apply for a job. I heard over the university that you were hiring computer technicians. You know, I can program and do this analysis. Oh, okay. Well, you can't go upstairs. So that, you know, you can fill it out down here. They sent two goons down to see me, and you know, in suits and heavies and guns, and they vetted me there, and they said, okay, we can sit here and fill out this application and go. So they left, and I was left alone with the door guard inside his little cubicle there on that floor. I finished doing my form, talking to him, and I went over by his guard booth and looked in there, and there was a piece of artwork he was drawing. It looked like it was like pencil or charcoal of the head of a guy in a new uniform, and it looked for all the world like the Nazi uniform cap and stuff, you know. And I said, oh, that's a good drawing. What's that of? He said, oh, that's our new uniforms we're getting. I said, oh, okay. I said,
what year was this, Stan?
That was 1974, I think. 74, 75, in that region. And he said, you know, we were talking more. I said, boy, I said, sure got a lot of security here. And he said, oh, yeah. We've even got survival stuff downstairs. We've got rooms and beds for everybody here. We can stay here for 6 months without going out. And we can pull in the doors here, and, you know, people attack us, we could hold them off. I said, why would they do that? So, I don't know. They might, you know. They might get upset with the economy.
1974. Hmm.
Yeah.
You'll tell them what we've got ready for today.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like a testing ground down there. It's all I can figure. They want to see how people react and, you know, be prepared in case they're acting badly. The interesting thing was that in addition to this finance company of Australia, the FCA group being in that building, it was also Australian Security Intelligence, ASIO, and I think ASIS, foreign or overseas intelligence group like our CIA. And in every capital city, they had buildings like this without windows and maybe one floor that had some windows open but with metal protecting it. And in every one of these buildings, telecom, or like the telephone company, had their internet routers and phones going through there so they could be tapped. Tells you, you know, a lot was going on. I wrote paper about it there under the pseudonym and had it, you know, distributed, went far and wide. But,
well, at least the Australians had private ownership of firearms then. They still do today, don't they?
No, no. Oh, no, no. Well, they took those away and,
I think it's 97.
96 or 97, yeah. Yeah. Holly and I were down there when that happened, and a lot of people didn't turn them in, just kept them hidden. But then you got to have ammunition for them, which is pretty hard to get. But yeah. I think they only recovered 450 to 500,000 weapons. And the rest were, you know, not quite.
Underneath an armadillo. Didn't they kill the person that represented Crocodile Dundee for not turning in his guns in Australia? Seems like I've heard that.
That sounds like urban legend to me.
Yeah,
it may be. I don't recall who that fellow was. Oh gosh, I know the name though.
There was a real person that the movie was based on, and supposedly he didn't comply.
Comply. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay.
Patriot.
Let's move
remember
on.
The Patriot here? You know, what's that actor's name, Holly? That, you know, Mel Gibson. Yeah. Mel Gibson was down in Australia at the time, and, you know, and he made the Road Warrior thing.
Mad Max
thing. And his agent, he's not his agent, his good friend, I think was the guy they were talking about because he had guns and stuff under his home. And it's been so long since I've talked to that guy, it's one year. Want mm-hmm. to know about it. I forget his name. But
so you knew him?
Yeah. Yeah. I was on the other side of the country, but we were of like mind in a number of ways. And I did tell him it was kind of silly to keep that much stuff in one place under his floorboards in the house. But anyway, someone ratted on him.
Well, they've got big alligators.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, I'm sure
I hope your grandchildren appreciate what kind of granddad they've got, Stan. I mean,
you know,
I thought
I
had an exotic granddad. You've passed mine up.
Well, anyway, it's just what it was. And I don't see the grandchildren at all these days. They're all too far away.
Mm-hmm.
Either 12,000 miles or several thousand miles away. It's just hard to
well,
see them.
Hopefully one will turn up on your doorstep.
You never know.
Well, it's great that somehow the scriptures got to you when you were a scientist and actually matched the science, which they amazingly always do when so many in academia try to say, well, the scriptures have nothing to do with true science, and it's quite the opposite if you're a true scientist without
an
agenda.
I know. They really aren't true scientists because you're supposed to be open-minded and consider all the possibilities before you think you understand what's going on. But when they don't even consider the alternate, they've been so brainwashed in university that, and by the peer group pressure, that's not science anymore. That's like the cathedral of science, the religion of science, rather than true science.
You mentioned Mad Max and such. Are you amazed at the incredible amount of TV series and movies today that focus on climatic chaos? My favorite right now is Revolution, which comes on tonight, where the power grid went out 15 years ago. And
About the Last Resort? That's not too good.
Yeah, that's another one. And
there are a lot of things like this that I think are meant to get people thinking. Now, I don't know whether it's to turn people into, in the United States, into revolutionaries, civil war groups, tribes, or whether it's truly trying to tell them, look, something may happen that you need to kind of get prepared for.
But yeah, that's what I kind of watch them with that in mind. What are they trying to mold the people to do? Because I'm trying to be molded to the leading of the Holy Spirit. But so it's a little dangerous to watch
that. What does
that
lead you to do?
Well, I was just going to tune in tonight and see what the next episode said.
Well,
Thomas and I have kind of gone full circle. We were prepared pretty good in 2000, but that's been 12 years ago, so I don't think we're ready for much now.
Well, I wouldn't give prep away at this point. I think one of the most valuable commodities other than food and water is going to be precious metals like lead.
Oh boy!
Yeah, that's gaining in value.
It is, and the thing is, you know, I'm not overjoyed about not having to shoot any human being.
No,
I found it hard enough to shoot an animal, but you're the head of your household, and it is your responsibility to protect that household. So when it is threatened, you know, you have to make that choice.
Well, I think we should be led by the Spirit. You know, if you're supposed to be in Manhattan, I guess you're supposed to be in Manhattan, but us in East Tennessee are pretty happy to be where we are.
Yeah, compared to Manhattan.
Oh, absolutely, out of the city. And I think the good Lord has been moving in many of the church groups across the nation. We've seen quite a few of them over the last 12 to 15 years coming into Colorado. Holly and I came back in 2001, and we checked with the we were getting our driver's license, as I was just chatting with the officer there, and she told me that they've had a lot of people moving into Colorado in the years, several years before we got there, for religious reasons, religious freedom, or something like that, she said. And we found quite a few of the strong Christian ministries, I'm sure you're aware of, in like Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs and other groups that we've had, Mennonite Church, whole churches move here from out of state with their pastor. But we've also seen some New Age turkeys arrive here. So it would appear that Colorado is going to be an interesting place if things go down.
Yeah, it seems to be a magnet for about everybody right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Let me ask you.
And been loving it down here, too. So.
This is based on your theory that the Earth is expanding. Well, obviously, it like you say, it is a greater diameter now than it was. But all the tunneling that's going on, and if let's say that you did go to the bottom of that 5,000 foot to your research facility with your long antenna, I mean, how does that hold up with an expanding Earth?
Well, I think it was not meant to really be.
But I'm saying in general, of course, how do all these underground caverns and bunkers and et cetera, how are they going to maintain structural integrity with the Earth expanding and with all the earthquakes and with magma rising and et cetera, et cetera?
Well, don't forget the
sinkholes.
These, I think, are a part of a phenomenon associated with the Earth stretching, because most of the sinkholes that we're seeing reported are in areas that have, like, sandstone or limestone, and they have water intrusion in there normally, mm-hmm. but the pressure of the Earth's mantle pushing things together, you know, gravity, you know, as well, forced everything to hang together until it starts to loosen a bit, it starts to expand, mm-hmm. and all these weaker areas where the water flood stuff, where, you know, pipes or from underground aquifers or whatever, they weakened and collapsed because they no longer had the side pressure to hold them together.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that salt dome in Louisiana that's growing.
Mm-hmm.
It just collapsed in, and it's a sinkhole of huge mm-hmm. dimensions. You know, to me, all these things indicate that the Earth's surface expansion is contributing to that. Now, if that's the case, then the underground tunnels,
mm-hmm.
which can be up to like 42 feet in diameter or so at least, using the German drilling machines, these things are encased in cement and steel in some places. They are going to be subject to Earth movement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure these have been considered. But whether all of their planning is taken, you know, it's done it wisely or not, it's another thing, because things are starting to happen in the Earth's surface that are kind of, you know, in chaos theory. You're not exactly sure what they're going to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm talking to you, your CK, I just got an email. Someone listening to your show said that my voice keeps chopping in and out, and it's very low, and he has the speakers all the way up. So can Jason have a look at that while we're talking?
Our engineer says we're all the way up.
So maybe you could dig a little deeper into the mic is all I could suggest.
Well, okay, I'll try that. How are we doing now?
That seems to be a little better, maybe 2 or 3 dB.
Okay, well, I don't know why it's cutting out. We
no.
don't have, like, voice-activated phones or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It sounds good across the air. It's just real low going across the Internet and the telephone mm-hmm. right now.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, that's, you know, I wouldn't want to be in one of their underground cities or tunnels because of all the crustal activity.
Mm-hmm.
However, when the sun gets really hot and things start to burn, it might be, you know,
advantageous to go underground for a little while, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't want to be a mole.
Isn't there a Bible verse about the people of the earth hiding in caves and praying that the rocks would fall on them because they're obviously miserable in some...
That seems to be a little...
Hide us from the wrath of the Almighty.
Yeah, I think that's a little later in the show.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure that all of the book of Revelation is written in the proper time sequence. It might be parallel structures in there, but... that's another issue, another time. But the sun itself is going to be surrounded by a cloud of something
mm-hmm.
very dense. And that cloud, and this is in several places in Scripture, Old and New Testament, that cloud is going to hide a lot of the sunlight. But little channels of light will get through it. It's what they say, like you hold a sackcloth of hair up to the sun, and you see little pinholes
mm-hmm.
of light.
Mm-hmm.
You see that kind of a cloud with only pinholes of light getting through it. Yet, even those pinholes of light will light up the moon at the same time to a blood-red color because the light is coming through that cloud and being filtered, and it forms a reddish light on the sun looking like on the moon, so it looks like it's turned to blood. That event is very close to each other, and that event could well happen in this grand solar maximum when things are going strange on the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another factor, guys. We are moving up into the equatorial plane. We're in it now, of the galaxy.
Hmm.
And we talked about supermassive black holes earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the polar region, but we didn't talk about the equatorial
region. No, we didn't.
Now, there's some strange stuff that goes on there because that energy coming out of the polar region, a portion of it curls back like a magnetic field and back into the equatorial region and back into the spin of the supermassive black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're in that zone, and we only hit that zone, I think, it's about every
26,000 years or something.
Oh, no, I think we hit it more often than that. We come through it and up above it and then dive down through it, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 years somewhere in that region. It might even be this 3,600-year period you're talking about. I don't know. But
mm-hmm.
We're like a sine wave rising up above the equatorial plane of the galaxy and then diving back down in and diving back up with this sinusoidal pattern around the galaxy center as we orbit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's... Whatever happens in that energy exchange there in the equatorial region could be quite interesting. I mean, even here on Earth, you know, in the equatorial regions of our planet, the oceans are 400 to 500 feet extended over what they would be if they were at the pole because of the centrifugal force throwing them out. Now, if that kind of stuff happens to the plasma that surrounds us, you know, the dark matter or whatever, we could see some unpredictable results as we pass through it, or starting to do now.
Well, I guess if you understand how magnificent the universe is, you can understand how magnificent the Creator is.
You betcha.
And it's, you know, for all these things to be coming together in our lifetime is scary, but on the one hand, and then exciting on the other. Where, how do you find peace of mind knowing about 100 times more than me and TC put together here? Maybe not Jason, he's sharp. But how do you find peace of mind, Stan, at the times
well, you know,
we live in?
Since I had an out-of-body experience, I've looked at life here a lot more differently than most people, and that I'm not afraid to die now. I know where I'm going, and there's no doubt, you see, and that we live out of this body in a much better place. So that, to me, you know, it's special. Not everybody gets that. I understand that. And Holly reminds me of that every now and then, how she wishes she had a peak like I had to make it a lot easier to endure all the stuff that she reports on. And it is heavy. And it does get to me occasionally. But I do sometimes feel like I wish I could run out in the street and just yell these things out to people and say, listen, you got to hear this. But instead of doing that, we do Blog Talk Radio and Holly does the website. We write books and do a lecture. And just do what we can as the Lord calls us to. And that's what we need to do. When He calls us to do it, you do it. And don't panic.
You want to do the George Bailey thing and run through Pottersville and scream, "It's a Wonderful Life."
You betcha. That was a classic, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That was a classic. You know, you were mentioning hand. On the one hand, this and that. I'm pretty much convinced that God is right-handed. Because His favored Son sits on His right hand by the throne. And in looking at the spin of the galaxies and the universe, I'm pretty sure it started out with the same spin somewhere as the Big Bang started everything, and then it drifted apart into upside down and sideways and all that. But originally, there was a one-handed spin put in to make the universe start.
That's an interesting...
It's kind of like starting the top.
Yeah. That's where you're spinning the top.
If you can imagine the huge amount of energy that the Big Bang contains, and imagine throwing that energy into a sea of, I don't know, dark matter that was just sitting there. The inertial resistance and stuff, as that started to absorb the energy, would be like you taking a big puff on a cigar and blowing it as fast as you could out into a room of clean air and watching the swirls and curls form, except it was done with a right-handed spin.
Well, He spoke things into existence. I'm studying Genesis right now, and if He can speak and get a lot done, you can imagine what He'd do with His hands. So,
well, even speaking is a vibration, is some sort of a medium that will transmit the frequency, you know, the vibration. And the dark matter, the fine structure, whatever you want to call the ether sea of the universe, when He spoke into it, it could very well have put a spin on it. Maybe he talked out of the right side of his mouth. I don't know, but it did form that directional spin. And a lot of sub-spins came out of that, and eventually had a lot of atoms and everything else.
Well, we're running about to the last 5 minutes, but I wanted to throw out a few more topics for you. One is we always like to end in a prayer. But what is your take on, well, I don't know, the alien phenomena? I mean, I listened to a little George Norrie at night, and it seems to be a huge thing. You know, I've not had that experience myself, and I'm not looking to, but obviously someone has. And what is your...
Now, is that Thomas or C.K.?
This is C.K. speaking now.
Okay, C.K., Thomas has the Cosmic Conspiracy of the Final Edition, and I'll address it from that in kind of broad stroke terms, because there's more detail to it in the book. But I firmly believe that the great deception spoken of by the Messiah in this time would be by Satan opposing to be a little g god and claiming to be our creator, and his minions that are with him be the angels, you know, the fallen ones, but will be elder brothers in space, you know, that kind of nonsense. And people are going to believe it because to believe the all- but this grand deception is upon us now. It's been building for 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
People thinking that little gray critters are, you know, from outer space somewhere, when they're probably just cyborgs or biological robots made by Satan to inflict bad things on the population of the Earth all over the planet, abduct them, breed them, whatever, and in general be a nuisance and a fearful thing. Whereas Satan can come in posing as an angel or messenger of light and say, look, these nasty little critters, we'll get rid of them. They don't belong around here. And we'll get rid of them for you. We'll protect you from asteroids, and we'll fix you with this thing with the sun, and we'll fix you so you're not starving anymore. And in a world economic situation, we can fix that. You can appoint your leader. We'll tell him what to do. And you can see how the grand deception would work, because with such super technology and apparent all wisdom and apparent to being our creators back, you know, thousands of years ago, that people would listen because the alternative would be too terrible to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Too many things are going to destroy the planet and hence life on the planet. So I encourage people to read that part of the book, The Cosmic Test. The last chapter I put in 2010 was about 8 verses only that I had translated from the book of Daniel,
mm-hmm.
and being very meticulous about it and researching historical documents to just translate those 8. And because a couple of them were just so hard to understand that many translators have just kind of glossed over them. And no offense to them, there was just not enough information at their disposal at the time. But when it says in the vision that Nebuchadnezzar had of that being a statue,
mm-hmm.
and those feet were mixed of iron and clay that would not mix it, that would not mix with the seed of man, you're talking genetic stuff there, beings that will not mix with our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very much like Genesis 6, where they tried it and produced giants and Nestle. So, yeah, I think that book will answer a lot of questions for folks.
And we're definitely at the door, just like in the days of Noah, with genetics.
Oh, unbelievably so. I'm sure that what we're seeing in the press is only just a fraction of what's going on in the back room.
Oh, yeah.
Stan, I've always enjoyed listening to you. I've been catching up with the radio shows since, I guess, 92. I got a shortwave radio, and
wow.
I don't know how long you've been on it, but it seems like I've known you my whole life. But I've never known what a price you paid to lose your family and children and such. So my heart goes out to you, how much it's cost you to seek the truth and to be a purveyor of it. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Stan.
And because that's a side of you I didn't know. I need to read some books, I guess. But can you
might need to do some preparation, too.
Well, God, gold, guns, and groceries is what we say here.
Yep. Yep, I agree.
The 4 G's. We call him Yahweh now.
But lead may not be gold, but put that in as a fifth.
But can you lead us in a prayer, Stan?
Sure, sure. All right. Folks, if you're listening, we're just going to close in a prayer this morning, or this afternoon, sorry. And we ask this of you, Heavenly Father, through Yeshua, Jesus, your Son, to enlighten us to what we should be doing as good servants in your household. Dark times. Let us be as efficient as we can be in our service to spread your word and to do what we need to do to call on it. And I understand it, as you do, Heavenly Father, that all of us can't be, you know, Hal Lindsey's or Jack Van Impey's, but if we have only one message to give to one person in our life and that moment comes and we accept that moment and make a witness, then we have done our job well.
Amen.
We ask everyone to feel like and to know